Anyway, welcome to our panel, which has the fantastic name of Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Backwards in Heels. I actually don't ever wear heels, but I don't do anything backwards either. My name is Kara Swisher. I run a site called All Things Digital, which is owned by Dow Jones, and I do it with my partner, Walt Mossberg. And it's, we also run a big conference that you might have heard of digital. We interview digital superstars, essentially, on stage every year at a conference, several conferences. And we have a fantastic panel. I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and then we're going to get into a discussion of women and entrepreneurship. It's a topic I write about a lot, unfortunately. I write about tech, all kinds of companies, but I tend to be the one that has to write about it. I hate to say this because the men don't really want to write about it or discuss it, but it's a really important issue. Many years ago, I wrote a piece for our site called, I worked for the Wall Street Journal for many years, covering tech also, but I wrote a piece called The Men and No Women of Facebook. This was pre-Sheryl Sandberg, who's the COO, but all I did was put up the pictures of everybody there on the site, and I just wanted people to visually see what was going on. It was essentially white dude, white dude, white dude, Indian dude, white dude. No ladies. And then many years later, I picked it up again and did The Men and No Women of Web 2.0. And I was noting that the boards of Web 2.0 companies do not have women on them, which is a critical job at the time. They've added one or two since then. And I, again, put up the pictures and showed really a lot of white dudes and not many Indian dudes and certainly no black dudes. There could have been. In any case, my point was being that not a lot had changed in a very short amount of, in the time, even though a lot of the people who run these Web 2.0 companies, I call them sensitive new age males. The head of Groupon, Andrew Mason, who's a very lovely guy, called me up, and because he's a sensitive new age male and quite a hothouse flower is what I call him, he said, "I feel so bad about this." And I said, "I'm sorry you're in pain." And I said, "Why don't you just put a woman on the board? Like, you feel so much better immediately." And he said, "Well, can you help me?" And I was like, "You can't find a woman with your two hands." I mean, and then I realized it was bad to say it that way. But in any case, you know, people are concerned about it. I don't want to, like, cast aspersions on people, but they don't do something about it. And there isn't activity. There's a lot of agonizing over it and not a lot of action. It's still a problem with women in coming into math and science at a very young age. There's not enough women moving through those programs. Those have declined. And there's still not enough women, even though there's a lot of women in entrepreneurial positions all over the internet, and it's actually a more tolerant and accepting industry compared to many in this country. It's still very low. The figures are very low. I'll let everybody introduce themselves. By Meg Whitman, when she was brought in to be CEO of HP, I called up Sheryl Sandberg and I said, "Now you're the second most powerful woman in tech." And she said, "Wow, that's three of us now," which I thought was funny. And she said, "Someday I hope to be 10, on the 10th on the list." And it's really, it's an interesting situation and in how you can fix it. But let's talk about things to do and what it's like and talk about the experience. And then we'll have time for questions at the end. Let's start with the end. Want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, my name is Pia Sorkar. I'm the founder and CEO of a nonprofit social venture called TeachAids, which was founded out of my dissertation work at Stanford. So we develop software to be able to deal with persistent problems in talking about HIV and AIDS education around the world. We were founded 2 years ago, and we're now in 70 countries.
Hi, my name is Pooja Sankar. I'm the CEO and founder of Piazza. Piazza is an online question and answer website for students and instructors, inspired at my time at Stanford Business School in an entrepreneurship class. Before that, I was a software engineer at Facebook. I can relate to that experience of being surrounded by white dudes, some Indian dudes. It was not pleasant. I can say that from my experience. I also want to say Piazza has almost 50% women, and I love that, being surrounded by many, many bright women at my company. And I worked at Oracle before Facebook, and undergrad in computer science at IIT. Thank you. And I'm Victoria Ransom. I'm founder and CEO of Wildfire. We are a social media marketing software company, so we help businesses of all sizes with all aspects of their social media marketing. Started the company in 2008. We're now almost 300 employees, so it's been quite a wild ride. We also have probably not quite 50% women, but we have a lot of really, really wonderful women in the company. And it's been wonderful being a woman in entrepreneurship.
Hi, I'm Michelle Zatlin. I'm the co-founder of a company called Cloudflare. And Cloudflare makes websites faster and safer. And we launched about a year and a half ago at TechCrunch Disrupt in San Francisco. And in that time, we've grown really, really quickly. We now make the web faster and safer for more than 430 million web surfers every month. So high likelihood that many of you in this room have been affected by the technology that we've built. So very excited to be here.
Okay, very highly technical people running companies in top positions, which is great. Let's talk a little bit about your experiences. Let's go back a little bit and discuss how you decided to get into the tech industry. Many women do not, or from a very early age, do not do math, drop out of math and science, many more. And there's all kinds of studies and reasons all kinds of interesting studies about why this is, sociological and such. Let's talk about what sort of moved you into the area and why you might not have done it. Why don't we start at the end?
Sure. Mine was pretty serendipitous to the problems that I wanted to try to solve. I've always been interested in technology. I've also always been interested in education, and it turned out that using technology was the best way to be able to prevent the kind of work that we're doing around the world. So when you're teaching about AIDS education in different parts of the world, sex education is banned, and because of that, AIDS education is either watered down or not given. So it was really important to be able to create virtual learning, virtual private learning environments for people to be able to learn about AIDS education and be able to access other doctors and medical health professionals through the internet and other services like that.
But going back further, like younger, how did you move into a science tech space versus something else?
I think for me, I was surrounded by people who, women and men, who were interested in science and technology, and that had a great influence on my life.
Was there ever a challenge to wanting to do that, or was it supportiveness from your parents? Or?
Yeah, I would say that it was primarily being supportive from my parents.
Yeah. Okay.
Mine is a bit embarrassing to actually share, because it didn't come from within me. My accent is misleading. I grew up as a child in Canada and America, but from the age of 11 to 22, I was in India, where parents often make a lot of decisions for the kids. So 11 to 16, all my high school years, I was surrounded by women who, you know, at the age of 15 or 16, actually dropped out of school to get married. That's the sort of city I grew up in India. And at 16, when the decision came, do I prepare for an engineering school or some medical school or some other profession, I was scared, actually. And I told my dad I want to prepare for medical because I thought it would be easier. And a year later, he said, Pooja, please, I really want to actually coach you for engineering entrance exam, the IIT exams, which 200,000 people a year give and 2,000 get selected. And he took it on himself, and my brother joined in, and they really guided me. And I think that was very important for me to give me the confidence that I could give this exam. I did, and a year later, I got in with a great score. And it was only into my fourth year or after graduating when I was an engineer in occupation that I realized I was really well-suited to think mathematically. But I can say that if I were given a choice, if my parents were in a country where, you know, the culture was to give a choice to children, I think I would have been too scared to study math and engineering.
Okay.
So actually, I really liked math and science as a child, but I don't have a technical background. So once I hit college, so I would have been a doctor had I not taken a different turn in my life. I took a scholarship to study in the U.S. and at that point went to college and decided I wanted to do something that would directly help people. And at that age, studying psychology seemed like the right thing to do. I've ended up not doing a whole lot with that. But I run a software company. I can't code software. So I think I'm an example of the fact you don't have to have a technology background in order to found a technology company.
Why did you move into a technology space, though?
So that was, again, a little bit serendipitous, I guess. So I used to own an adventure travel company.
Totally different. We had trips throughout the world, and along came Facebook, Facebook brand pages, and we thought that would be a great place to market our travel company. Quickly realized that in order to do that, you would need to attract an audience and engage that audience. We thought about giving away a free trip. To do that, you'd have to build a Facebook application. That seemed like a barrier to entry to marketing on Facebook, so we went out, found some developers, and built a Facebook application, and that was the beginning of Wildfire.
So, similar to a lot of the that everyone else has kind of talked about, I was a scientist. I have a chemistry degree, so I was really into science and math. And I'm lucky that, you know, my parents encouraged me to do that. But I'm not a coder, so I'm a chemist by training, and I thought I was going to be a doctor. Everything in my life prepared me to be a doctor, like every single thing. And I got to college, I was in chemistry, getting ready for med school, and then I realized one day that I had never really realized why I wanted to be a doctor, and the reason why, and then when I started to think about it, I was like, oh, I like the idea of helping a lot of people. This is why I want to go into medicine. And I thought, well, before I go to med school, I should try something else. And so, much to my parents' dismay, I got a lot of phone calls from them. I decided to minor in business on the side, and I just wanted to try something else. And they're like, what are you going to do in business? And I had no idea what that even meant, because again, I was just this really nerdy lab geek. And
so you were already there in the geek part.
Yeah, I was really in the geek part. But I was like in lab coats. So I was really toggling between like lab coats and business suits, because I was, you know, chemistry by day and business in the afternoon. Anyhow.
Sounds like a plot for an NBC show. But
yeah, exactly. It really, I mean, and so I graduated, and I knocked on a lot of doors to get into a job in business, because everyone's like, you have a chemistry degree. Like, what can you possibly bring to this company?
I can poison you.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, be careful.
You wouldn't know it. Yeah. You'd just be dead. Move along. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And I just said, well, look, I know nothing about what you do, but I have really good analysis skills. And so finally I got a break, and I started in finance. And I was really good at running numbers and analysis, and of course I just learned the industry. I mean, if you have a curiosity and a passion to learn, you can do it. Thirst to learn. And so I loved what I did, but I really disliked finance. I just felt like this isn't, you know, when I think about why I wanted medicine, I wanted to help a lot of people, and I was like, this was not helping a lot of people. And so technology, for any of you thinking about getting into it, it's an amazing way to impact a lot of people. So for my company, we make things better for 430 million people every month. That's a lot of people. And, you know, that's more than I could do as a doctor or whatever. So for me, technology helps achieve the same sort of thing that originally I set out to do in medicine, of being able to impact a lot of people around the world.
Let's talk about that idea of impact. I mean, people, I get that from a lot of entrepreneurs, although I don't believe most of it most of the time. I really want to change the world. And, of course, they also want to own Porsches, et cetera. But there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. But one of the things, the reasons people get into entrepreneurship and how they succeed in it, how different is it being a woman, besides the fact that there aren't a lot, for you? What are some of the things, Pooja, you worked at Facebook, for example. How is it different for you when you're in these environments? And how, one of the issues is there's not enough women being funded. A lot of it have to do with VCs or mostly men, and it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy thing that goes on, sort of a cycle. What are some of the difficulties you face, and maybe perhaps, and we're going to get into what is the advantages might be.
Yeah, I'll share a bit more about my experience as a woman preparing for that IIT exam, where 2,000 only get in, leading up to college, and why I think it actually turned into an advantage to become an entrepreneur today. No girls used to prepare for IIT in my hometown. They used to learn how to cook to get married. And the boys would all prepare. So every year from my hometown, 100 boys would get into IIT, and not a single girl. I was the first girl to get in from my school in my hometown. So that was scary. And then I went to IIT, where it was 420 boys in my class and 20 girls. And it was scary to study, because I would study by myself. And I would struggle a lot. And no boy can ever say they understand what I went through. Because they did have the support group. They had 20 other classmates that they could ask one another. And it's a huge difference when you study with other people versus when you study by yourself. But what's amazing is I was aware of this difference, and when I did go to other companies like Oracle or Facebook, again, I was very aware of the situation I was in. I did not feel comfortable, but I was aware that I did not feel comfortable. At Stanford Business School, in an entrepreneurship class, when I was told, inspired by other entrepreneurs, think about a problem you are passionate about. Instantly, that problem that came to me was, how can I help women in math and science classes have a better support group? That is what inspired me to start Piazza. The lack of confidence in undergrad actually switched over the years, where I gained a lot of confidence. And today, when I go out to raise money or when I start a company or run a company, I actually have an insane amount of confidence that I don't find in many young women, and I did not have myself as a young woman. So I think it really turned into an advantage over the years. So,
now, when you talk about confidence, it's an interesting issue. One of the things Sheryl Sandberg, who's one of the more prominent women, who's not a technologist but has technology background, talks about is the asking part of it. She observed that most men who are underqualified don't mind asking for things they may be underqualified for, and women have to make sure they're 100% correct and in the right place and 100% qualified. She talks about women being more interested in mentorship than things, like asking for things. It goes on, the idea of like putting your hand up in crowds and asking questions and things like that. What are the difficulties? Each of you can talk about it. Are there more difficulties faced by you as a woman, or is that just something that just has to change in behavior of women? Because it's hard to know where it begins and where it stops and whose fault it is, because I don't know if it's a fault or it's just the state of oxygen kind of thing.
Speaking to asking, when I say confidence, I am very comfortable now asking other people questions. And I know that by background, because I'm an engineer, I think logically, so I know I can phrase my question in a logical manner. And after that, one mentor at Oracle once told me, if you never learned this or if you were never exposed to this, why should anyone expect you to know it? And that helped me ask myself, have I ever been exposed to this? Is there any reason I should know this? And if the answer is no, I'm going to ask. And people have been thrown off in the past 3 years that I've started on Piazza. At the beginning of an hour, the level of questions I ask, and at the end of the hour, the level of questions I ask, because through asking questions, I've learned a whole lot more from these people. And that's positive reinforcement for me.
Yeah, I'd actually agree with that as well. A lot of my work in other countries especially, I found that the majority of the people in the leadership positions, whether you're talking about governments or NGOs across the board or in corporations that are then funding us, are still men. And just learning to be able to ask those questions is so important, because you end up if you wait too long, then you lose those opportunities. So I think that over time you just learn that you just jump in and start asking those questions, and how important that is to just do it.
To be perfectly honest, I've never felt that it's difficult being a woman in Silicon Valley. And I can't comment on, I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. My first job was at Morgan Stanley. Sounds a little similar to yours. But probably that was the toughest place. Although there were a lot of women at the younger levels, there were no women very few as you went up the ladder. But aside from that, I've been an entrepreneur most of my life. And I've never felt that it was particularly difficult for me. I've actually felt that Silicon Valley is a really supportive community. I've definitely found times where I'm like, I'm the only woman in the room, and often it's a bunch of 50-year-old white guys and me, the only woman in the room. But it hasn't felt like someone was not appreciating me or discriminating against me or anything like that. Having said that, the one thing that may have been a little different in my experience is we didn't go out and try to get funding until we'd really proven our business. So, we had employees, we had revenues, we had profits, and we were growing really fast before we went out and tried to raise money. So it may have been a very different experience if it was more kind of an idea that we were going after and we hadn't proven ourselves yet. I think because the proof was sort of in the pudding, we'd already done it, already were on a great path, then there was a lot of interest in investing in us, and that may have created a different experience than what some women experience, I think.
Yeah, I have a very similar view as Victoria. I think that to be successful at anything, man or woman, it's really hard. Like, it's just really hard to get to the top of what you want to do, whether you're a guy or a girl. And I just think that there's a lot of people who happen to mention often women in technology and how hard it is. And I don't know, I personally have the same experience. It hasn't been harder for me at all. But I just think it's hard to get to the top of your game for everybody. So for us, it's been if you really want to do it, you can make it happen. And yeah, of course, there's like people you meet that are less helpful, but I don't take it ever because of my gender. I just take it because, well, they don't think what I'm doing is interesting or whatnot, and I just, you know, immediately forget about it and go to the next thing. Because you just, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's all about pushing the ball forward and making progress. And so you can't spend a lot of energy thinking about, you know, rehashing, oh, why wasn't that person more helpful to me? It's just, it's not productive. It's just a matter of moving forward.
I see. But I'm going to argue a little bit with you.
Okay.
Because when you look at every single startup, there's not a woman at the head of any of, I mean, startup, the hot ones or the whatever deemed, if I could list them all. Not a single woman heads them. Is that a coincidence then? That you just aren't trying hard enough? Not working hard enough? Not getting in there?
I would argue that we're a pretty hot startup, and I'm a woman, and I'm on the board,
I'm talking about the ones,
co-founders.
Okay, then the ones that get the big...
I'm a CEO of a company that's got 300 employees. Right. I won't disclose our valuation, but it's...
pretty good.
It's big. It's big.
It's still not in the percentage of women in technology and in the workplace. It's still not the same. It's a percentage of 2-3%.
It's a low percentage. Absolutely.
So why is that? I want you to think a little hard why that is.
Because there's fewer people to recruit. Because there's fewer women doing engineering. There's fewer women doing math backgrounds. And again, you're going to work in tech. You need to want to learn. I mean, even if you're not the coder, you need to be excited about whether it's web infrastructure or you need to understand the bowels of how the internet works or technology works to be able to work in the industry. And if you're not interested in that, there's fewer women coming through. I mean, there's fewer people in computer science. There's fewer people doing math. I mean, it starts much earlier. And I think it's really important for... mentorship for women to go talk to high school, like before they get to college, and be a mentor, and not even a mentor, but just tell them what the options are, because their parents probably don't know, and it's not their parents' fault. Like my parents have no earthly idea like what technology means, but you know they were supportive of me. You know they really pushed me hard to do a science degree, and you know you just again I think that. There's fewer people from a younger age, and that's the crux of the problem. And so 10 years from now, I think it'll be different. I think you will see more women in tech because we are changing it. I know a lot of women working in tech doing really impressive things. So 5-10 years from now, I think the numbers will be different.
I do want to share, I don't think I could have come where I am today without a few key people saying things that actually showed confidence in me. And I do think that there are very smart women out there, young, who... you know, if they don't see confidence in themselves through other sources, they may not be able to challenge themselves. And again, those few stories are, I wasn't confident to give the IIT entrance exam. My dad instilled the confidence in me. When I was at when I was applying to Stanford Business School, the director of admissions told everybody in the room, we have confidence in you. We believe in you, so you should believe in yourself. And that was very inspiring to me to start believing in myself in a very odd way. And I wonder if many young women are growing up surrounded by people who aren't able to show the confidence that those women deserve, whereas men tend to be more kind of surrounded by peer groups that are all trying to do very difficult things, and that helps them instill confidence in themselves. It's just a thought I have.
Good. I think we see a lot of women going into law school. We see a lot more women going into medical school or even getting undergraduate degrees, but we definitely don't see enough women getting degrees in business and in technology. And I think that it's up to people like us that are in positions to be able to create those opportunities for kids when they're younger. And not just through mentorship, but actually do something to create programs and create internships or create various opportunities to be able to get to the kids when they're younger and show them that there are all these other opportunities that are available and encourage them to take them.
Well, let's talk about the younger age things, because every study shows this. There's a moment at 8 years old, at some very early moment. Gina Davis, an actress, that Gina Davis from Thelma and Louise, actually has an institute of studying a lot of gender differences and focusing a lot on science and math, which is interesting. She puts her hair up and wears smart glasses, but she's still really attractive looking and looks like a Hollywood movie star. But in any case, she's doing these really fantastic studies, which are looking at media images, a lot in the cartoons and things like that. And one of her studies I just heard her talk about it, was that women are in usually the sidekick in most of these adventures or whatever they are, and typically none of them have a job. Now, cartoons do not have good jobs, but that said, the boy characters in cartoons have jobs, better jobs, and the women characters do not have jobs. And of the women that have jobs, almost none have jobs in math and science or any of those areas that are like that. Now, media images are very strong, I think. I think they're much stronger than people realize, even in cartoons. Where do you think it begins in that age? Is it a socialization? Is it a thing? Because when you can't get people into those things at an early age, and then they don't get into coding, which I think if you're not really have a technical, but the most of the founders of these companies are highly technical. Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Larry and Sergey, who run Google. You can go through each of these companies. All of them are highly technical. Coding, they have the chops, and it matters in these technology businesses and entrepreneurial businesses. How do you move that? It's a really interesting, you know, situation. And when you talk about the confidence to do that, I'm a mother of two boys, and I have to tell you, they think a lot of themselves. probably more than they should. Sometimes they're like, I'm fantastic. I'm like, not so much. So, I would say no if I had to be, you know. Of course, I think you are as your mother, but as a person, not so much. But it's really interesting to watch the girls in the class sort of bring themselves down more and them push themselves out more. And, you know, it is a cliche, but honestly, it isn't, like when you start to look at it. So let's talk a little about the early age, and then let's talk about entrepreneur. Like, how do you get to that leadership position? Because that's really where the rubber hits the road to me.
So I would say I never lacked for confidence as a child, but it came a lot from a lot of people here have mentioned dads, and I would say my dad encouraged me hugely and instilled a lot of confidence. One thing though. And this is typical in New Zealand. I went to an all-girls high school. More than 50% of kids in New Zealand go to boys' school or a girls' school. It's not kind of a private boarding school sort of thing. I think that might help, actually, whether it's athletics or science classes. There wasn't that dynamic of the boys take over and the girls stand back. I heard an anecdote the other day that really hit home on this issue of at a very young age, girls start to get this idea of where their place in the world is. A mother was talking about her little girl, who I think was about 8, and she's very mathematically inclined, and she used to play chess with her dad a lot, was really good at chess, so they encouraged her to join the chess club at school. It was all little boys. She was the only little girl. She went a couple of times, and then one day came home and said, I'm never going again. And they said why, and she didn't really want to talk about it. But eventually it turned out, actually it wasn't the boys that were teasing her, it was her little girlfriend that was saying, you're the only girl in the chess club, why are you doing that? So there is something about, to your point about socialization, that indicated that it's not okay to do something that's typically associated with boys. And to your point, all those little boys in the chess club would continue doing that, they'd get better and better at it, and she probably wouldn't. How you solve that? I mean, actually, it's a really good example. I guess the cartoons that we watch, the games that we play as little kids in preschool or whatever it may be, are probably really important. Because I think lots of parents are really good at combating this idea, but peers or peer pressure is so powerful. So your parents can say whatever they like. If your little friends make you feel bad, then you're probably going to be taken off track. So somehow it's getting in at that level, I guess.
I think that starting at an early age as well is extremely important, I would say, in elementary school. And so we always think that we're learning a lot through our formal schooling environment, and of course we are, but there's so many hours in the day after school, on the weekends, or even during summer vacation where we're spending learning from those informal environments, whether it's our parents or our friends or however we choose to spend that time. So I think working together to figure out ways to create opportunities during those times that these kids have more, leeway to learn about different things is going to be very important. So it's important to get it in there early so that as they grow up, they continue to have opportunities.
I think of one challenge, and I don't know the solution, which makes me very sad, but when I was growing up, you know, the norm was the women's, the girls and moms sit together, and in the other room, the boys and dads sit together. And the conversations would be very different. The moms and daughters would be talking about problems around the house and, you know, all the things about managing a household, and the dads and boys would be talking about world affairs and events. And for the life of me, I was not interested in what the women would talk about. I really wanted to jump over, except the norm was I sit quietly in that corner, so I was never challenged. And again, I don't know the solution, but, you know, I think in this country where you actually can get up and go to the other room, you know, in India you couldn't, but in this country you can. And I think from an early age, if women are encouraged, small girls are encouraged to be sitting among, you know, boys or men who are talking about, to some degree, I call it more intellectually challenging topics, but, you know, I think they'll learn to think more scientifically or more mathematically.
Interesting. So one of the things, I do think media images are more important than you realize. Again, I'll say something. Cheryl happens to be on the board of Disney, and again, she has to bring it up, but one of the things she said is, when she was taking the job, is she said, look, I don't mind princesses. Everybody likes a princess, but can she have a job? Can the princess have a job? And actually, for the first time, if you can believe it, and you don't realize this, Pixar has never come out with a movie where the woman is the principal character that doesn't get married at the end. And they are about to come out with one called Brave, which you should all go see, about a little girl in Scotland who competes so she doesn't have to get married. It's an old myth. I believe she doesn't get married at the end. I'm sorry to ruin the end, but I believe she doesn't actually get married at the end. And it'll be interesting. I was talking with Bob Iger about it, and I said, well, if this doesn't work, you're going to not make any more, and we're going to go back to princesses that get married to the Beast in the end. But he's like, no, we'll do more of them. I don't believe him at all in any way. I think money does matter to the success of things do matter. But it's an interesting conundrum where it begins. So let's talk a little bit about more, if you do things differently as female entrepreneurs versus male entrepreneurs, or are you just the same? Is it? I don't believe you're the same. I think you might think you're the same, but it's not the case. Because when you do, are there different things going on, or is it just person by person? Do you have different struggles or different things to deal with than others?
So for us, the software that we built is animation, and it's based on learning effects, and people actually learn more from 2D characters when it comes to these sensitive images. But one thing that we do, and it's, again, research-based, is we have male versions and female versions of the software that we develop. So the female versions, and it's because the research shows that females are more comfortable learning about these kinds of sensitive issues from females and males from males. And so we have women in leadership positions from these different countries give their voices and their avatar in the materials that we develop. And what's interesting is that we've had large groups of women watch the animations, and we've had large groups of men, and even at a young age, they are selecting the ones with the female leadership, even though they've got the access to both. So I think if we do try to create that shift within the environments that we're working in, that we will see those changes.
What about some struggles or things you contend with that are differently?
I was actually entered into an arranged marriage when I was 22. It was very Indian. I finished college, and my dad said the next logical thing is for you to get married, and then you start your career from there. And it was difficult. I was in that for 3.5 years. It was one of the most challenging times of my life. It shaped me to who I am today. It actually helped me understand what I stand up for and what my values are, and I think I'm very happy that I understand that much better today than I would have at 22. But, you know, one message I'd love to give...
I'm sorry, can I make clear, you were married, and then you were married for 15 years?
Three and a half years.
Okay.
At 22, it was a struggle. Now I'm happily married, where my dad didn't apply any pressure the second time around, and it was wonderful, because I could take my time and realize that it was a better match the second time. But, you know, I often think younger women, there's an expectation from society that you're supposed to be married, and that's success. Speaks back to the princess who gets married in every cartoon and in every fairy tale. And, you know, I cannot emphasize enough how important now I think it is that every woman should take her time to realize what her values are, what she wants to do, that she should instill confidence in herself before she even tries to go down a path where it's two people living a life together.
So how do I do things differently? So I think So I disagree with you a little bit that you have to have a technology background. I think when you're first founding a company, and it's a few of you in the room.
I don't have to, but I think if you look at the list.
Yeah, that's fair. So I guess to build upon that, I think to build a great company, you have to be able to inspire people, you have to be able to lead people, you have to be able to hire people, fire people, and you have to have a vision, and that's often where the technology part comes in, but I don't think you need to have to code in order to have a vision. So I think one of the things that perhaps I do differently is the way that I inspire people and lead people. It's my style, but maybe it's more akin to the way that a lot of other women would lead than how men would lead. I'm not sure. That's probably a stereotype. But I believe in the good of people. I definitely believe in praising to get the best out of people. I am not afraid to put a lot of pressure on people when they're not living up to expectations. I'm not afraid to fire people. But the culture we've built around our company, which I truly believe is one of the greatest strengths of our company, because we've got 300 people that we're really are behind us. They're putting everything into that company. It's a lot through collaboration, through listening, through taking the time to really mentor and get to know people. And so those are my personal values and my leadership style, but it may be more akin to how a lot of other women would choose to lead than perhaps how some more typically male-led companies are run. In terms of unique challenges that women face, one, I think, to be perfectly honest, and you see this, we both went to business school together, you see this in the reason why at business school they're trying to admit women younger and younger, is that at a certain point in life, women face this choice of do they want to have children or not. And a startup is a full-time endeavor. I really admire...
It's a child, really.
It's a child, yeah. And some women are able
to
do it, but...
a nasty little child, too.
Yeah. I don't know how you fit that in.
There's a lot of colic.
There's a lot of whining. Yeah. It misbehaves.
Yeah.
So I think for some women, you face that choice at a certain point, and maybe that's why you see women starting a lot of companies, but at a certain point, having someone else come in and take over, and unfortunately often that's a male. I don't know if that's the reason, but it could be a reason. I know that business schools face that challenge a lot, where they'll educate young women, they'll go out and work for a couple of years, and then they will have a family and sort of step back from their career, and so they're trying to get women to come in early in their 20s, so they have a good shot at really getting to a good position in their company such that when they do step away, they can come back in and have a lot of power over their career.
So there's three of us that started Cloudflare, Lee and Matthew, who are both in this room, and myself. And I think it'd be interesting to ask them what they think I bring to the table, but sometimes we talk about it. And you know, if any of you are thinking about starting companies and you're going to have a co-founder, you want to have like a diverse team. You want people with different skill sets than you and different backgrounds. And I think of it as like a Venn diagram where there's a little bit of overlap because you need to be able to appreciate what the other person brings to the table, but you want to cover as much surface area as possible. And so some of the things that, you know, whether it's a woman or because I'm Michelle Zatlin, because of my experiences, you know, I do bring different things to the table. You know, communication or making sure people know what each other are working on. I mean, at first we didn't have that, and I was like, people don't know what other people are working on. We need to tell that, because then that, you know, you start finding bottlenecks and you start solving it faster and we make progress quicker. They would probably say that our company has a bit of more of a maturity because there was a woman from day one. I mean, we have dart guns in our office, but people also are working hard, concentrating on their tasks, and then go home at night. We're not there till 3 a.m. We just don't have that culture at all.
Are you like calling yourself Wendy of Peter Panville or something? I mean, Wendy, are you like Wendy or something?
I don't even know.
Pan?
Yeah.
You don't know Peter Pan?
It's been a long time since I played.
Wendy is the main character in Peter Pan, besides Peter.
Okay.
And she sort of controls those Indians, but go ahead.
Oh. I don't think I control anyone, but yeah.
I was going to ask who has children, but I don't think you might. But,
no, I don't. No.
Okay, all right.
Which is why I haven't seen Peter Pan since I was
Hence
like
you haven't
nine.
Seen it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
So, I mean, yeah, I think women do bring different things to when you're in a group environment, and I think that's great. And I think if you're starting companies, you're early on, having a diverse team is the greatest thing you can do. You don't want, and again, diversity can be, you know, different countries, different backgrounds, different skill sets, you know, different genders. Diversity means a lot of different things, and I think it's really powerful. I think a lot of the best companies had diverse founding teams.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think Google has a very diverse, much more diverse. They spend a lot of time trying, and actually women are in positions of quite power there, actual power.
Yeah.
Even though there's most guys at the top, but still they're very close. A lot of women are close to the top, and it does make a difference. I was with Sergey, one of the founders of Google, once for lunch in the cafeteria. When you go there, it's like it's a small world after all kind of thing. You're like, oh, look at there goes the tribe from New Guinea, and, you know, of coders. And I joked with him, and he was sitting there, and we were talking about something, diversity, and I said, you know what, I'm really disappointed you don't have someone from Togo. And he's like, what? We don't? And he started, you know, they did it mathematically. We need to have 0.023% from Togo. You know what I mean? They did it in a way that should be reflective of the world, which was comical in some ways. I said, it's all right. I'm glad you're thinking about it, actually. Let's talk a little bit about that issue of children. Do any of you have children? Children?
Expecting.
No, yes, she's in July. I gave you some tips. You don't have children. No. It is a bigger issue. I think a lot of CEOs have talked to me about this in tech, in that a lot of women don't lean into the, you know, they pull back in a way, which is difficult, because it does create and feel less engaged, or feel they have to feel less engaged, mostly because they actually have to have the kid, which is, I may tell you, very difficult, having experienced it. But it's they pull back. You pull back a little bit, and you have. I feel guiltier. It adds all kinds of things. A lot of women executives say they feel guiltier than their husbands, even if they're more high powered. No matter how high powered they are, they feel worse. There's issues of wanting to stay home, expectations of staying home, and actually just you need to stay home kind of things. There's not a lot of choice in many ways. I happen to be gay, so I always am like, well, you should get a lesbian in your relationship because there'll always be someone who's nurturing. But it's true. It's a little easier because, you know, I can be a pain in the ass and move right through on through the thing when I know someone's being motherly somewhere. I'm motherly, not a lot, but I try. They seem to like me. The children seem to like me. So I was playing one for them today, which was a whole diatribe about Nerf guns today. I got a long, extended message about Nerf guns, which used up all the space on my voicemail. Do you think about that with your women employees versus, is that, you know, do you worry about the entrepreneurial, because you really do. I'm kidding when I said it's like a toddler. You really have to mind a startup almost in the same way. I mean, do you worry about your female employees over your male around those issues?
Not a whole lot yet. We have a very young team. So the funny thing for us is they're really young. We're just starting to get this whole crop of people getting engaged, and I'm certain give it 2 years, they're all going to be pregnant all at once, which will be fun. I'm kidding. But we have some of our best employees have young children at home, in some cases several young children at home. We've just tried to be really understanding about that. Our belief at Wildfire in general is you don't need to be in the office to do a good job. As long as you're doing a good job, I don't care where it's getting done. And the thing I've noticed about people with children, particularly mothers with children, they're so efficient with their time. So I feel like they get the same amount done. They just get it done quicker. So we don't have a lot of women that have got young babies, but we have some. And we're totally comfortable if they go home at 4:30 p.m. because they need to relieve the nanny or pick up a child from daycare. I know they're back online again later. I'm not going to check, though. And if they're not, that's fine because they're getting their job done. And they're incredibly efficient. So we've just tried to create an environment where that's okay.
They're efficient because they're having no sleep and no fun, just FYI.
Well, one of them, who I love, she's wonderful, but she comes in on a Monday and I say, how was your weekend? She says, thank God I'm back at work.
That's true. One soccer game too many. Yeah. I hate soccer. I have tattoos, and I when I go to my tattoo, I like tattoos, I'll be honest. And when I went to get one, they call me soccer mom at the tattoo place because I look kind of like a sucker. I could be a soccer mom. And I don't look like the dudes in the tattoo place. And so I'm like, I hate soccer. Don't call me soccer mom. But any observations on that, treating female employees differently?
Yeah, so we have almost all female employees at our organization. But everyone's very young. And so, and hasn't started having kids yet. But I could see that when they do, at least from the ones I've spoken about it, I don't think it's going to change their lives that much in the sense that they love what they do. And so they have husbands or partners that will support them in being able to manage the kids. And I think that those conversations are happening a lot more now than probably in the past.
So I'm 5 months pregnant right now. And I got married a year ago, and immediately after I got married, my husband was ready to have a baby, and I wasn't, because the team was only three people. And when the team's three people, I can't take, you know, a month or two off to take care of my baby, so we had to put a plan together. And the plan was his parents were going to move out, live with us, and I get along very well with his parents. And they were going to live with us to take care of the baby during nights, days, whatever it was. So they've already moved out. And over the 1 year, I knew my focus was to build a team that could continue to run the company in an independent way for the time that physically I actually cannot be in the office. And I think it's my job that when other women start, you know, getting ready to have babies, it's my job to make sure that they're part of a team that can take on responsibilities while physically, again, I'm less concerned about the mentally, like she's past the stage where, you know, she can't walk around and stuff, but like when she's physically not able to come in, the team should be able to shoulder all of the responsibilities together. And I think having going through the experience right now, I feel responsible for all other women on my team.
Are you worried about losing a step, or do you have a worry about not keeping up?
I'm actually not worried at all, and I think I'm in a very fortunate and unique position where my husband's parents, they're Indian, they're the most perfect type of Indian grandparents you can possibly envision, where they'll give up their lives for their grandchild. I think that's rare. I cannot say that every woman I've met is in the situation I am in, but it again goes back to choose your partner carefully, because if you really want to excel in a career, I think making sure that your partner and his or her parents are so supportive, and they understand what it means to run a company.
So the tip would be get Indian grandparents.
Yes, do that. Do that.
Okay. All right, some other tips, and then we'll go to questions. I got to get me some of those.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
my mom's great.
I don't have kids.
Not just with kids, just in general, tips for women.
For women and entrepreneurs. That's great. Okay, so this is the biggest thing.
We're not going to go to you for the kid advice.
Yeah,
obviously.
Good, because I don't really have very good. Yeah,
don't drop them.
Okay,
that's
good.
One. And feed them. Two. Give you more later.
Okay, thank you. If you're thinking of starting a company in this room, or you are thinking of starting a company, I think that's great. And I mean, there's tons of tips I can share, but there's one that I think is scariest when you first start working on your idea, so that's the one I'm going to touch on today. Think bigger. So a lot of, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and their ideas are so, I mean, they seem easy, because it's like they don't take very many people, and they can just go and like go to all these local businesses, and they're going to do this thing, and I'm just like, you want to think big, and I'll tell you why. First, if you think big, like Cloudflare doesn't make the web faster and safer, we're rebuilding the internet. Now, to some people that sounds literally absurd, but other people think that sounds like they're incredibly, they get really excited when I tell them that. And so then we can recruit people to come work with us. So engineering, really hard to recruit. We don't really have a hard time because there's engineers who are like, I want to change the world. I want to rebuild the internet. And they come along for the ride. For funding, same thing. Big idea. We're trying to rebuild the internet. Some, you know, investors think that sounds amazing and they want to go along for it. And so if you're an entrepreneur and you're thinking, what am I going to do next? Think bigger. Think, how can I affect millions of people, billions of people? Don't close off your idea to be really small.
So grandiose thinking.
Big thinking. It's very powerful.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. It's really hard to build a successful company in an industry that's either too saturated or just where the opportunity is too small. Honestly, I would just say don't overthink it. I almost worry sometimes that with so much talk about why there aren't enough women in entrepreneurship and is it hard to be a woman in entrepreneurship, that it might actually discourage women from coming into entrepreneurship. I don't believe it was any harder for me, and maybe I just had a really special experience, but
it was your accent.
Well, let's hope so.
We're all charmed by that, and just here's the money. We love those.
All right.
Kiwi accents.
I'll try to so you know. Kick it up a notch then. You know, when we started Wildfire, truthfully, it was just because there was a need and we thought it would be fun to work on, and we did. And then we got some traction, so then we expanded the vision, and then we got some more traction, and then we really expanded the vision. My philosophy all along was, what is the worst that can happen here? The worst that can happen is that we fail. If we fail, I'll go and get a job. Okay, I might be a couple of years behind my colleagues in business school. They might have a bigger title than me. Big deal. So honestly, just give it a go. Make sure that you're never in a situation where if you don't succeed, you really can't recover from that. But I think probably most of you can, so give it a shot. It's great.
I started Piazza by myself, so it wasn't that I was with a couple other people shouldering that scary task of starting something, and it was really scary for me. And I don't think that was more because I was a girl and not a boy or anything. I think just the idea of starting a company by yourself can be frightening. But the confidence, again, I'm going to go back to confidence. A classmate of business school said, Pooja, you did computer science. You were a coder. And you're at business school, I mean, you can build the first version, and so I did. But it took talking to other people to give me that confidence that I could do it. And in 1 month, I picked up a book on Ruby on Rails. I didn't know any Ruby. And in 10 days, coded a prototype of Piazza that I started to show professors. And a professor said, I'd like to use this. I like it. I like what I'm seeing. And then I knew I really had to get a team together to build something for production, you know, production set of users. But I think it's more about believe in yourself, you know, and think about an idea you're really passionate about and just have the confidence that you can do it.
I think just going back to similar themes, just to think really big and to know that there isn't anything that you can do if you don't put your mind, put your mind to it, and surround yourself with other people who have incredible skills to be able to accommodate different things that you're learning about and need.
It's interesting. One of the things, I only just look at numbers. That's why I'm very interested in numbers. And I do think it does start early. It starts with VCs, who are largely men. There needs to be more women VCs.
Yeah.
And successful women VCs, not just women VCs. If you make the money, they pay attention to you. It's just like that in reporting and anything else. If I break the stories, I win. That's it.
Yeah.
So there is a problem there, that there's not enough, because if you tend to drift towards people you're like, whether you mean to or not, people do that. They're comfortable with people they like. And to me, the last thing that's really important is my grandmother was a really wise person, and one of the things she would say about certain people, and she'd say frequently wrong, but never in doubt. And so I find a lot of entrepreneurs that are successful, and it's often men, and it just is. They're frequently wrong, but they're never in doubt about how fantastic they are. I see that with women less. They want to make sure they're right before they do
something.
Like you said, I got to profits. A lot of companies don't do that. They just go for it kind of thing. They don't worry about looking good.
Yeah. Although having said that, it was 2008. It was hard to raise money. So in this environment, I'd say raise money.
Yeah. Yeah, there's plenty of money out there right now.
Yeah, there is.
So it's just like this idea that you don't have to be, everything doesn't have to be squared off kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it is a gender difference between men and women.
Right.
And there is an element of entrepreneurship of a suspending disbelief that is really important. And when you say think big, it's the same thing, but think big and think that you can fail, think messy is sort of a bigger idea of that.
But I think that's great if women can use that to their strength, because I think it's also pretty problematic trait in an entrepreneur if all they do is think that they can do it and they're not kind of a little paranoid at the same time. And I think some of the great entrepreneurs like a Mark Zuckerberg doing so well, but I think he's pretty paranoid and constantly looking for who's coming up behind him and who's doing. And so I think it's, you have to believe in yourself. You have to, because you're going to hit so many roadblocks and it's going to be so rocky and you're going to have so many doubts. So you have to believe in yourself, or at least find a support network that can help you through those times. But I think also being aware of the problems around the corner and not getting too comfortable is actually really important as well to succeeding as an entrepreneur. There's a number of crazy entrepreneurs out there that have crashed and burned because I think they weren't actually aware enough of their own potential failings.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. All right, let's get some questions from the audience right here. I don't know if there's a mic. You need the mics, you guys? Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Right here. Hold on.
wanted.
Oh. Hello there.
Hi.
I am very, very encouraged by this panel. Thank you very much. I spend a lot of my time after my corporate day job focusing on activism with parents to try to really raise awareness on the princess, on the toys, media, and marketing issues. And that you are raising it here, it just means that the awareness is starting to grow. There's more, there's a broader understanding. I'm about to leave my corporate day job because I want to focus on this issue and I want to move forward with a social enterprise, and I would love to get your tips and direction on how I can do so. How can I engage with this world? Who are the people that can support me in this new venture?
Okay, that's a big question.
Anything?
Why don't you give one or two quick...
If you can find people to come along with you, like build out a team or mentors, that's a really powerful way, advisors. I mean, a lot of people want to help make the world a better place, and so if you can help find those people to give you advice, make introductions, at, you know, places like this. I mean, everyone here are open to ideas, and so you just want to keep finding those people who are open to your ideas so you can keep, you know, making progress going forward. But I think don't keep everything internally. If you start talking to other people, it can be really powerful and helpful to you.
So I would suggest not mentors. I'm not a big believer in mentors. You want people who are going to give you something.
Yeah.
You know, get some. Yes. That's one of my theories of life. Get some. You know, in general, by the way, all through your life. I have all these nephews who are such good doobies, and I'm like, stop being such a good doobies and get some. But not in a greedy way, but like the things that will help you. You know, versus like what I need to do this, and therefore I need this. You know, very think strategically instead of like let's talk on a, in a wide sense about mentorship. I think, and I have to say, women do that a little too much comparatively. Rather than this is what I need this, and to me that's really important. Another question.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Okay. You've got the mic. Confidence. Just take it.
Yeah.
It's your mic.
I have a two-part question. My first question is, I worked for quite a few women-owned businesses, and I grew up in a household where my dad was like, go, go, go. My mom was like, do, do, do. So I've never really had that confidence. I do find that you needing that was really endearing, though. But I have a company with my husband. We have an interactive design firm. It's like under a year old. And I had this experience with a client last month where they didn't want to talk to me because I'm the president of the company, mind you. They wanted to talk to my husband, the man that's doing the work. And so my husband wrote them back. My first reaction was like, fuck you, yeah. You motherfucker.
And yeah, that's
thought,
the
okay,
best
reaction. I don't know if, you know.
That is the best reaction, by the way.
Yeah. And my dad was like.
I'll send you a coffee cup. I have one that says, fuck you, you fucking fucker.
Oh, my God.
In the Castro of San Francisco. I know, big surprise, but go ahead.
I would love that mug. I'll give you my card. I thought, okay, so as a woman, I know I have to try to keep emotion out of this because I'm an emotional person by nature, and I know in business it's best to sort of get it all out and then think productively. But what we ended up doing was, you know, my husband wrote an email and he said, I'm really flattered. My wife's the president of the company and the project manager. I'm just the designer here. So she's involved in every aspect, but it didn't work. They only wanted to speak to him. So we kind of just said, fine. And things were not as productive. And I kind of had to say, well, I'm not in on these emails and I'm the project manager. And so you're complaining that things aren't as productive. And he's just the designer. He's not thinking about timeline. You know, he's the creative guy. And I don't know if anyone's experienced that. I like still so angry about it, but I gave in, and I don't know if it was. I just wanted the job to get done so we can get paid. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I handled that well. I don't know.
Any tips?
I know it's loaded, right? Yeah.
I've often
I know what I do.
I've often been at conferences where we're an exhibitor, and I just sit there quietly, and people think I'm in marketing. And they have no clue I'm the founder or CEO. I personally don't mind because I think the company's moving forward, but I think in your situation it was outcome-driven, like not having you included affected the outcome. At least in my case, you know, we're a few people behind the booth, we're giving demos, and I actually don't care if the others are giving good demos and I don't even have to come up as the CEO. But yeah, I can understand your frustration. It is frustrating, you know. Many people assume that women like can't run leadership positions at a company.
I'm with the oh no. I'd go, oh, no, you'll be talking to me.
I should have, like, thrown a fit. And, like, yeah. You don't want to deal with me, then go somewhere else.
You have to do that. You just do. You have to speak out. Women mm-hmm. with their voices have got to yell. Well, then start yelling. I mean, it sounds dumb. But, I mean, it's really... I'm partners with Walt Mossberg, who's fantastic. He's the best partner you could have. But often, you know, I want to talk to Walt, you know, and be interviewed by Walt, mostly because he's much easier. You know, we that's one thing. He's very said, absolutely not. You know, she'll be doing this, and you're going to be so sorry you even suggested it. It's really important to just put your foot down. We've put our foot down with some very major figures in technology. It may be because they're scared of me, but still, it definitely is. There's often times when I'm like, I won't say who, it was a major mogul who owns our company, and you know, he's always like, he's fine now, but initially he was like, Walt, and I'm with him all the time, and so he knows me, and he acknowledges me, and I finally said, you don't know my name, do you? And he goes, yes I do, and I said, no, you don't. I'm not going to make you say it, but you don't, but you really need to. And it was like, and I thought, you know, he didn't know my name. And I just pointed it out to him, and I thought, well, he could fire me, but I have a contract, and I'll get lots of money if he fires me. So I calculated the time, but you have to say something at the time. And it worked, because he definitely knew my name next time. I don't know. Being a pain in the ass is easy for me, but go ahead. Oh, we are. Okay, we're out of time. If you have more questions,
we'll
women are
around.
Up here. Okay? Outside.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.